We're holding on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. Yesterday we mentioned, so the Mishnah had talked about this idea that if you have fruit drying on your roof, rain is it's about to start raining, so you're afraid it's going to get damaged by the rain. So we said on Yom Tov you're allowed to take it and throw it down through a skylight. Or throw it down, or some of us even say to lower it down using a rope, whatever. So one thing we discussed, the first question we discussed is, what's the maximum amount? And we wanted to see, can we compare that to a Mishnah in Shabbos that talks about that you're allowed to move a certain amount, you're allowed to move up 4 or 5 large boxes of produce in order to make room for guests or for a Beit HaMedrash. And we discussed the pros and cons, why not necessarily is it the same thing. There's Bittul Beit HaMedrash, here there isn't. Shabbos is more serious, maybe. Shabbos is more... Bittul Beit HaMedrash means that people need room in order to sit and learn. So if you have a situation where the only space available, the only large space available for that purpose is your grain storage area or whatever, then you have to move some boxes. But over here, there isn't that consideration. Then there's also the consideration that maybe there's the consideration that Shabbos, people know to treat Shabbos carefully, Yom Tov not so much. Maybe we have more reason to be stringent on Yom Tov. But on the other hand, there's no loss. Here there is. Now continuing, the Gemara is going to ask about another detail. Hasam Tanan, we learned also in that Mishnah in Shabbos, Avaloya Sa'otzer, that you're allowed to, we said you're allowed to move the 4 or 5 boxes of Teruah or straw or whatever it is, Avaloya Sa'otzer, but you're not allowed to empty out the complete storehouse. And there we said the reason is because, to clear it all the way down to floor level. And the reason is the floor of the storehouse is usually made out of dirt, as most floors were in those days. So we're concerned if you clear it out completely, you may notice holes in the ground and try to smooth them out, which would be an issur bona on Shabbos. And that's what the Gemara says. But Amar Shmuel, my avaloy sa'otzer, what do you mean you're not allowed to clear out the whole oitzer? It means avaloy yigmer sa'otzer kula. It means you're not allowed to completely empty out the whole oitzer. Duma osila shavuya gumus, because you might come to smooth out holes in the ground. So that's there in connection with this din of moving boxes of tevuah on Shabbos. Hachamai. So what's the din over here? Do we apply the same thing that you're trying to take this wheat or barley or whatever it is off your roof and throw it down for the skylight? Do we apply the same rule that you can only you can't clear it all the way down, all the way down to make the roof completely empty?
There's something in about shvuya gumus.
Maybe there is. The roofs in those days were also sometimes made out of, but yeah. So that's so.
Made out of what?
The roofs in those times were also sometimes made out of dirt. So that's it. Yeah. So therefore, do we say that in that case, with Shabbos, maybe we say it's also to clear it all the way down to the floor because Shabbos is stricter. Aval Yom Tov to kill Shapur Dami, but Yom Tov is more lenient, so maybe it would be okay. Aduma, or maybe the other way around. Hasam de ikka bittul beis medrash amet loy. In that case, where we say even though there's bittul beis medrash involved, you want to clear out a large area so the talmidim can sit and learn, and yet we're placing restrictions on it. Hachab de ikka bittul beis medrash like hoshgen. Here, there's no bittul beis medrash involved. It's just saving your stuff from getting wet. So how much more so? You shouldn't be allowed to clear out the whole thing, maybe. Next one, the Gemara asks. Here's another detail. Here in our Mishnah, we said Mashilin Peretz Derech Aruba B'Yom Tov, that you're allowed to throw down the fruit through a skylight on Yom Tov.
Aruba.
That's the word for Aruba. Aruba means the skylight. In modern Hebrew, I think Aruba means chimney, but whatever it is, that's the word for a hole or whatever, or window or whatever in the ceiling. In Masechta Olos, which talks about all the dinim of Tumas Oil, there's talk about Arubos extensively, because we had a little bit of this, I think, in Eruvin or in Sukkah or something about cases where there's an Aruba, where there's a hole in the middle of the roof, and when Tumah goes through it, when it doesn't, yeah. So here we're saying you're allowed to throw it down through on Yom Tov. V'amar Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said a din on that, lo shanu ela ba'osei gag. This only applies within the same roof itself. So you have, within the same roof where the fruit is, you have a skylight, and you're allowed to take the fruit and carry it over to the skylight and throw it down. As opposed to al megag legag loy, but from one roof to another, then no. Even if the roofs are on the same level.
In other words, if you stand on one roof.
If you're standing on one roof, you can't carry it over. You can't carry it over to the other one to throw it down the skylight. V'tanya hachinami, and so we learn also in a braisa, ein mitbaltman megagla gaga filik shagagatei and shoven. You cannot carry the screw from one roof to the other, even where they're on the same level, which you would think there's no extra tircha, but nevertheless we're not allowing that degree of tircha. So hasamai. So now we have to ask. So the first two questions we asked were, we have a din that it says by Shabbos, and we wanted to know whether it applies by Yom Tov. Namely, are you allowed to move more than, is there a limit on how many boxes worth of stuff you can move? And are you allowed to clear it all the way down to the floor? Now it's the other way around. Given a din that we're saying in Hilchas Yom Tov, do we go and apply that same din back to the din of Shabbos as far as clearing out stuff? In other words, what if we're talking about, again, in the case of Shabbos, we're talking about you have a storehouse full of grain, for example, and you want to clear out several boxes of it to make room for Orchim or whatever. What if it wasn't a storehouse? What if it was a roof? Are you allowed to carry it from, so do we say that on Shabbos you're also not allowed to carry it from one roof to another? Kol shekhen Shabbos t'chamira, do we say, well, how much more so? Shabbos is more stringent. Maybe, again, we're going back to the idea that Yom Tov being more lenient, people are going to be more mezalzel in it. No, because it would be zilzel Shabbos also, but the point is Yom Tov people might treat more casually because they're on malachas, you're allowed to do on Yom Tov. So therefore we have to be stringent in certain aspects of it. Aval Shabbos t'chamira, but Shabbos is more stringent, so therefore nobody's going to be mezalzel in it. Shapur dummy, so maybe it would be allowed. Or duma, or maybe the other way around. In this case, in our case over here, where there's loss involved, you're going to lose this fruit. It's going to get damaged or moldy or whatever if you don't move it. And yet you're saying there's a limitation. You can only move it on the same roof, but not on a different roof. Hasam Daleka Hefsid Peres like Oshagan. Then over there, there's no Hefsid involved in moving it from one roof to another. So how much more so? Maybe you'd only be allowed to move it on the same roof.
Chapter dummy means what?
Chapter dummy means it's fine. Yeah. And case number four, Hachatnan, Tanya, actually, in our case of Yom Tov, it says in a braisa, Lo Yishal Shalem Bechevel Bechalonis, you're not allowed to lower it down using a rope through windows. And you can't bring them down by way of steps or ladders. The chalonis we're talking about over here, what Rashi says is, what we mean is, suppose that the roof, let's say, has a wall around it. There's no skylight in the middle of the roof, but you could lower it down over the wall and then in the wall. Further down there, there'll be a window. So you'll lower it down using you'll put it in a box or whatever. You'll pick it up over the parapet, over the wall, lower it down until it reaches the window, and then somebody inside there can go and grab it and bring it inside. We're saying you're not allowed to do that, because again, there's extra tircha involved. Yom Tov we're talking about. So that's the question. Hasam mai, so what would be the deal over there by Shabbos? You know, again, if you had to move boxes, mipnei orchim, mipnei bitul beis medrash, would the same restriction apply that you can only move them around in the storehouse itself, but not down. Let's say from the roof. Yeah, outside. Yeah. Again, do we say hachad b'yom tov would also the lack of bitul beis medrash? Over here by yom tov we say it's also because there's no bitul beis medrash involved. Aval Shabbos the ikah bitul beis medrash. But in the case of Shabbos, in the case in Shabbos that we're discussing, where there is bitul beis medrash, the whole reason why you're trying to move these boxes is to make room for orchim or for people to learn. Therefore, maybe Shapur Dummy, maybe therefore it would be fine. Adoma, or maybe the other way around, yeah. Right. Yeah, well, that was out in the field, right. In Shabbos, though, we have this din where you have a storehouse full of boxes of tzvua, whatever, you're allowed to move them in order to make room for Orchim or whatever, yeah. So then, Adoma, Hachadika, Hefted Peres, Amrit Loy, or maybe we say the other way around. In that case, in our case, you're saying even though there's a financial loss involved, the fruit is going to get moldy, and yet you're saying there's restrictions. You can throw it down through the skylight, but you can't lift it up over the wall and then put it down, because again, there's extra tircha involved. Yeah. So then, Hasan, like a hefted paradise like Olshikin, there's no hefted involved. So maybe all the more so. You might say teku. Which actually, you know, usually when we say teku on something, it usually means that we should be machmir. Actually, in a number of these cases, we say, specifically in the case of as far as how many boxes you can move and whether you're allowed to move all of the fruit, even though the Gemara is ending up with all of them as teku, nevertheless, the halacha as Paskin and Shulchan Aruch is that actually you're allowed. We're not machmir to that extent on Yom Tov.
The only way you can be make though is because it's the Paskin, the Paskin, and the Paskin, and you can't Paskin
Okay. But that's, yeah, I mean, usually with take, we usually mask, but in this case, it seems to be not. Yeah. The question is, a number of Mephoshim ask, why is, in all of these four cases that the Gemara was asking about, how many boxes you can move? Can you clear off the whole roof? Can you, what do you call it, can you move it to a different roof? Or can you move it, or can you bring it down through a window in the side of the house? Each one, the Gemara seems to be using a different set of arguments about the possible pros and cons, whether we should apply a din from Yom Tov to Shabbos or from Shabbos to Yom Tov, as the case may be. Now, why is that? So the Pnei Yeshua says very simply, each of these questions was asked by a different Amora at a different time. Each one came up with different svaras of what the possibilities are, why you might or might not apply it to Shabbos. So there's no consistency necessarily between the four of them. He says, big deal, different people came up with them. The Shittim Kubetis, though, has an interesting explanation, partly based on a different girsa in the Gemara about what some of the pros and cons are each time, where he explains in detail how each of these four cases, the Gemara is using only the questions that are relevant to that case. For example, one of them is the first one. We said the first one, the question about whether you can move more than four or five boxes. We wanted to argue that we should treat Yom Tov more strictly than Shabbos, because people tend to be careless more with Yom Tov. On the other hand, the second one about clearing off the whole roof, there we said no. I mean, there we used the argument that Yom Tov should be more lenient than Shabbos. So why is that? So he says, because the first one, the how many boxes you're moving. No, but that's the thing. The Shittim Kubetis explains, when it comes to how many boxes you carry, and yeah, the more boxes you carry, the more tircha it is. Therefore, there's more reason to say, since we're not talking about a malacha, after all, we're talking about tircha, and people tend to be careless with Yom Tov relative to Shabbos because you're allowed to carry on it and you're allowed to do other things. So therefore, we would think to be machmir more on Yom Tov than on Shabbos. On the other hand, in the case of clearing off the whole roof or clearing out the whole storehouse, there we're dealing with, there's an actual possibility of a malacha. Why are you not, in the case of Shabbos, why are you not allowed to clear it all the way to the floor? Because there might be holes in the floor and then you'll smooth them out, which would be an issur d'oraisa. There, when it comes to Isurim Daraisa, no question, Shabbos is more stringent than Yom Tov, and therefore the Gemara uses that argument. And he goes through and explains how each one, the Gemara uses exactly the questions that fit the case, right? And the Mishnah had said, "Machatzinas apeiros." That you can cover if you have rain leaking into the house on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, then you can cover fruit with kalim or you know, a tarp, whatever. Omar Ola. So Ola says, this isn't just true of fruit. Ola says, "V'afilu avira delivli." This would even be true if you have a row of bricks that are set up. You're intending to build with them. So you have them all set up already in the place where you're going to start building with them. Now, on the face of it, they're mukta. Well, not on the face of it, they are mukta.
Yeah,
because no, they're mukta. No. We talked about actually in the previous parak that when they're not cemented, then actually there's less of an isser of binyan and stira with them. But they're still mukta. If you just have loose bricks, we'll talk about soon. Loose bricks you're able to use, for example, to sit on, to lean on, or whatever. But bricks that are laid out in a row where you're going to be building with them after Shabbos, they're mukta because they're mukta machnas chasar and kis. You're intending to, you don't want to use them for any other purpose because you don't want to ruin them. And yet, sit on them, but you're not going to because you don't want to move them out of place or whatever. You don't want to break them. So nevertheless, Ula is saying that if you have something like that in your house on Shabbos, you have a row of bricks where after Shabbos you're going to be using them for renovations in your house or whatever, and and the roof is leaking, you're allowed to cover the bricks with a tarp so they don't get ruined. This is on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. No, that's the thing. You can't move the bricks themselves, but you can put something on top of them, is what we're saying, yeah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yitzchok Amar Peiros HaRa'uyin. Rabbi Yitzchok says that, no, it has to be fruit that is suitable to carry, meaning it cannot be fruit that's mukta, for example, tevel. And Rabbi Yitzchok goes according to his own reasoning. Because Rabbi Yitzchok says, we have this way back in Shabbos, that you're only allowed to move a keli on Shabbos for the purpose of something else which you're allowed to carry. We talked about, for example, taking a bowl and using it to cover an egg that was laid, for example, where the egg is mukta. We talked about, for example, taking a bowl and using it to cover a candle that's lit so it doesn't so the roof doesn't catch on fire. Rabbi Yitzchak, we said Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't hold of these kinds of things, except in certain cases. We said you can find a loophole, but in general, Rabbi Yitzchak holds you're only even for example a bowl, which is itself not mukta, you're not allowed to carry it on Shabbos unless you're carrying it if you want to use it, for example, if you're using the bowl to put on top of something which itself is not mukta, fine, you're allowed to. But if the thing itself you're trying to cover is mukta, then you can't. According to Rabbi Yitzchak. So therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying you want to cover fruit. Fine, the fruit is you're allowed to move is not mukta. You're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. Therefore, you can cover it. The bricks are mukta, machas is certain case. Therefore, you can't cover them. Right. That's what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. For you to take a tarp or a keli or whatever and use it to cover the bricks would be you're moving a keli, which you're allowed to move, for the sake of something which you're not allowed to move. Well, let's consider. What does the Mishnah say? Mechasin es haperis bekelim. You're allowed to cover fruit with kelim. Which? What does the Mishnah say? Peiros ein aviru d'livni loy. Only fruit you're allowed to cover. You're not allowed to cover a row of bricks. So therefore, that would be a steer to Ola.
And
in favor of Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer is no. The Gemara says loy. Not necessarily. Hu adin afilu d'afilu aviru d'livni. No. The Mishnah could even mean maybe that you are allowed to cover bricks as well. Since the first part of the Mishnah is talking about fruit, and obviously there it has to be talking about fruit because you can't pick up bricks from your roof and throw them through the skyline on Yom Tov, so there's no question they'd be mukta. So therefore, for consistency, it continues talking about fruit also. But not necessarily to exclude anything else, yeah. The Gemara says, Tanan, well, let's consider. You're telling me that the Mishnah is continuing with what it talked about and does not mention anything else, but the Mishnah continues. V'chein kadeh yayin v'chadeh shemen. The Mishnah continues that you're allowed to cover that you're allowed to cover jugs of wine or jugs of oil. Now those the Mishnah wasn't talking about before. The Mishnah had not talked about if you had a jug of wine on your roof that you're allowed to send it down through the skylight. It only mentioned fruit. All of a sudden now the Mishnah is mentioning jugs of wine and oil. So we see the Mishnah is not limiting itself to what it talked about in the Reisha. So therefore, then you should say if the Mishnah is specifically mentioning fruit and specifically it's mentioning jugs, then it means only those which are not mukta, not bricks, which are mukta. So again, we're back to, we have a question on Ola.
Because here
we're mentioning something which was not mentioned in the first part of the Mishnah. You want to say the first part of the Mishnah mentioned Peiros, so therefore the next part about covering things also mentions Peiros, but it mentions more than just Peiros. It also says, v'chein kadeh yayin v'chadeh shemen, also jugs of wine and oil. So you see already, the Mishnah is willing to add other things. So according to Ola, the Mishnah should have said, v'chein kadeh yayin v'chadeh shemen, v'chein levenim.
Yeah, because one is Muslim, one is not.
That's the question. It seems that we're making a distinction,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And that would be only according to Rabbi Yitzchak.
Right.
The Gemara says, Hoch, my skin and betivla. You know what we're talking about over here? These kadeh yayin, the kadeh shemen we're talking about, are actually ones which are tevel.
Okay.
Which are mukta. And yet, let's put it this way. Rabbi Yitzchak does not have to explain it that way, but Ula is able to explain that the kadeh yayin, the kadeh shemen are tevel. In and of, you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos themselves. Even that case we were talking about before about moving boxes of things, not for for the sake of Orchim or whatever, we said, the Mishnah had said there in Shabbos, you're not allowed to move Tevel for that purpose. So according to Ulla, that's exactly what the Mishnah would be telling us by adding Kadeh Yayin, but Kadeh Shemen, that you have something which is Mukta and nevertheless you're allowed to cover it. In fact, that seems to be a logical way of understanding it. Because if you're going to say that it means wine and oil, which are mutter to eat, well, then what do you need to add? It? We already said peiros. What do we mean to add kadeh yayin? What are we adding by saying kadeh yayin v'kadeh shemen? Obviously, it has to be like Ola, that we mean these are a different kind of kadeh yayin v'kadeh shemen than the peiros. The peiros are mutter to eat. The wine and oil is not. The assumption, by the way, is like we were saying at the end of the previous perek, is that fruit not necessarily will be tevel yet, you're still allowed to eat a snack from it, because it's not necessarily yet nigmar malachtam. Wine and oil is definitely nigmar malachta. It's definitely you've completed the processing of it. So if you haven't taken truma, so that has a real possibility of being tevel if you didn't take truma and maisi yet. Fruit, not necessarily.
If you have olives mixed with oil, is that nigmar malachtam?
Usually you would prep all the olives, wouldn't you? But, I mean, if you have some, why would you have some olives mixed into the oil?
You pressed the olives, but you didn't remove the
You didn't remove the pulp. Okay, but the oil is still. I don't know. Actually, the Mishnah in Maaser talks about when the Gemara Malacha is for various things. I think for oil, it does talk about when you skim off the stuff that floats to the top. Okay, yeah. Anyway. Right, Gemara says not necessarily. Kadayayin, v'kadashemen, it's tzrichalei. No, maybe actually, even according to Rabbi Yitzchok, you could argue that the Mishnah had a special reason why to mention these kadayayin, v'kadashemen, even though they are mutter to drink. We're talking about that ma'is that was taken from them. Why? Because you might have thought otherwise. Lahefsid meruba chashashu. The Chachamim are concerned about a major hefsid. If you leave that fruit up, if you leave that fruit and the rain drips on it throughout Shabbos, by the end of Shabbos it'll be moldy. It'll be completely ruined. Lahefsid more lachashu. Maybe they weren't worried about a minor hefsid. Namely, the jugs we're talking about are not necessarily sealed ones. If they were sealed, you wouldn't have an issue with the rain leaking on them anyway. We're talking about they're open. But what's going to happen? During Shabbos, during all of Shabbos, you'll have a little bit of rain will be dripping into there. So now you'll have, by the end of Shabbos, there'll be some water mixed into the wine or into the oil. Big deal. That's not a major thing. You can always, you know, you can always leave it to, you know, you can always strain it out or whatever after Shabbos.
And so that
would be the chiddush. Kamash Malon, that would be the chiddush. Nevertheless, we are even worried about that. We do even allow you to worry about this hefsid mort and to cover even the kadeh yayin and the kadeh shemen, even though it's not as major a loss as actually having all your fruit rot. Tosfos, by the way, points out that, you know, we were just saying that we wanted to say, according to Ulla, that the jugs of wine and oil was talking about Tevel. Didn't he just say 2 days ago that Tevel, that theoretically Tevel is movable on Shabbos, because if somebody were to take Truma and Ma'aser from it, then you would be able to use it. Why don't we use that same logic here to say that you... No. We're talking. But no, it doesn't. That's the point. You don't have to have the intention so much, because once Truma and Meister is taken from it, it will be
after
usable. Nevertheless, Tosfos says that still, you know, as long as it's true, it could be that Truma and Meister will be taken from it. Nevertheless, until it is, it still is mukta, and you're not allowed to move it. Even Ulla would agree with that. But he would say, you very well, you can't move it, but you can still cover it. So we're still in the middle of it. We still have Ulla has his position, Rabbi Yitzchak has his. We haven't been able to disprove either of them from the Mishnah. Ulla would say the Mishnah, when it says kadeh yayin v'kadeh shemen, it's talking about ones which are tevel, and nevertheless you're allowed to cover them. Rabbi Yitzchak would say the reason why the Mishnah says kadeh yayin v'kadeh shemen is to tell us that we even allow you to cover it where otherwise you would only have a small loss, a minor loss, because you'd have a little bit of water mixed into the wine. Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. A braisa says, person machtelas hagabi levenim b'Shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat on top of bricks on Shabbos. So there you go. That's exactly what Ulla is saying. The answer is no. We're not talking about bricks that are set out to build. We're talking about diyatu mebinyana, bricks that are left over from a building. D'chazi l'mizgal, they're suitable. You can lean on them. You can lean, you can sit, whatever on them. So yeah, those are not mukta. But bricks that are set out in a row to build with, those would be mukta. Tashma. Another proof, person machtelas hagabi avonim b'Shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat on top of rocks on Shabbos. Tanan, noisin kli tachas adelaf b'Shabbos. We see the end of our Mishnah says you're allowed to put it. Thank you. You're allowed to put a keli under a leak on Shabbos. B'pashtos, the rain that's leaking in is the rain that's leaking in is muchta, because you can't use it for anything. It's dirty water. And yet we're allowing you to move a bucket to put it under there for the sake of catching that water. That would be against Rav Yitzchak. The answer is Bedela for Roy. We're talking about where the water that's leaking in is Roy. It's suitable to use for some purpose. For example, Rashi says you could give it to an animal to drink. You might not want to eat it, but you could give it to an animal to drink. You could wash with it, whatever.
So it's not completely mukta,
right. And that's, you know, we talked about briefly yesterday, to tackle when there's a leak, you know, there's been leaks here in the shul recently, and they put out a bucket. One of the rationales for that is, in fact, that water is in principle usable for something. There are poskim who say that where you're dealing with an issue of hefsid, where the floor or whatever is going to be damaged, that you have more of a reason to be able to.
Flip.
Yeah, that too, maybe. Yeah, so that may... Right. So yeah, that may be a consideration also. We'll talk about it on Ahmed Bey's, actually. We'll have a case involving a hefsid where you're allowed to put a bucket under a leak. Tashma, person machzalas hagabi avonim b'Shabbos. The Braisa says you're allowed to spread out a mat on top of stones on Shabbos. Stones b'pashtos amukta. The answer is they're not mukta. Ba'avonim mekruzolos, the chazin lebeis akisa. We're talking about mekruzolos stones. Rashi over here and in a number of other places translates mekruzolos as actually in various places Rashi explains that mekruzolos means sharp. Like they have a one end that's a little bit sharp that you're able to use them for wiping with. We learned in Shabbos about the kind of because the kind of stones that you can use for wiping with, right? Tosfos in a number of places explains that that's not what Makor Zolus means. Based on a different Gemara, Tosfos explains it means soft stones, like not regular hard ones, but like ones that are basically like sandstone or whatever, where they're soft enough that you can use them for wiping without scratching yourself.
And the other one, the other meaning is.
So Rashi says Makor Zolus means sharp. Whatever it is, the point is, and therefore they're suitable for wiping. They have a pointy end, not sharp maybe, but pointy. They have a pointed end that you're able to use. Whatever it is, the point is those stones are not mukta, because you need them you have a use for them. And yes, you may want to cover them on Shabbos because Rashi says the reason you'd want to cover them then is because otherwise they're going to sink into the mud and you're not going to be able to use them.
Yeah. So there's a
right. So you still don't have a proof that you actually are able to carry something which is mukta, because maybe the stones are not mukta. How about another one? Tashma. The chazim of kisa. They're suitable to use in the bathroom, yeah. Tashma. Post machtzelos hagabe kaverif dvarim Shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat on top of a beehive on Shabbos. B'chamim mipnei chama. During the summertime, you might want to do it to protect them from the sun. Or b'chamim mipnei g'shamim during the rainy season to protect them from the rain. Or b'vad shalo yiskavim lotsud. As long as you don't mean to trap them. Which we'll talk about soon what that means exactly. Yeah, we're talking about as long as you don't mean to trap the bees inside.
Also,
we'll get to that soon. We'll get back to that point soon. Wait. Meanwhile, the point is on the face of it, what are you putting the mat there for? Is for the sake of the bees, which the bees are mukta, and yet we see you're allowed to pick up the mat and cover it. That would be against Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer is Hosam Nami Dirkadvash. Okay, you could answer that there's honey in the hive. You're not doing it in order to protect the bees, you're doing it in order to protect the honey from getting spoiled. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about a wild beehive someplace in the forest. We're talking about a beekeeper has a hive full of bees. But he would want to it's hot weather. It's hot weather, so he wants to spread out a mat over it to protect it. But according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you would have to say, you can't do it if you're meaning to protect the bees, because the bees are mukta, but you can do it in order to protect the honey, because the honey's not mukta. Okay, that works out fine during the summer when there's honey in the hive. What do you mean? The Braisa had said that you could also be doing it in the rainy season in order to protect them from the rain. In the rainy season, in the winter, there's no honey in the hive. They only collect it during the spring and the summer. The answer is, true, but we still would need it if you're doing it in order to save the two chalas, the two honeycombs. As a standard thing, the beekeepers, the Gemara talks about this in Baba Basra, as a standard thing, a beekeeper would always keep two honeycombs, two layers of honeycombs full of honey in the hive, even during the winter. The bees need that. They live off it.
They live off it, their own honey.
Yeah, where necessary, where they can't go out and get nectar or whatever. Yeah, they or pollen or whatever they eat. Yeah, they live off the honey in there. So therefore, you always need those two challahs, but they're there even during the winter. I says, what do you mean? Are you saying challahs mukta same? Those two challahs are mukta. You meant to leave them for the bees? Yeah. Okay, well, fine. The Braita is talking about where you had in mind before Shabbat. You know what? I decided I'm going to take some of this honey from the two honeycombs anyway. Yeah. The Gemara asks, what? So Avala Chishu Aleim, my author. So what? Are you telling me, according to the Yitzchak, then that if you did not have that in mind, you would be also to cover the hive with the mat? In that case, Adatanya Vavachli is Kavin Lotsud. In that case, why does the Braisa have to all of a sudden come up with a case out of left field? When are you not allowed to cover them if you're going to be meaning to trap the bees? Find a better thing to say. Only in that case. Better the Braisa would be able to make a distinction within that din itself. And when is it talking about that you're allowed to cover the hive during the winter? When you decided before Shabbos that you want to take those two honeycombs. But if you didn't think about them, then it would be also. And then that would fit exactly with what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. The fact that Braisa is not making that distinction seems to agree more with Ola. The answer is Hachikam. No, what the Braisa means to say, even if you dealt with the Muktzah issue, so therefore you're allowed to cover the hive with a mat because you did intend to do it in order to save the two honeycombs, and you plan to eat from them on Shabbos, even so, there's another rule, there's another consideration you have to keep in mind, which is Vovachle Skavin Lotzud, as long as you don't intend to trap the bees. Trapping would still mean no, because it's like for example, we learned earlier in the Masechta about Seder. Even, for example, an animal that you own, if it's in a large enough area where it can easily get away from you, there's still a matter of Seder. We talked about, for example, that if you have a deer and a large beaver in, then you're still not allowed to catch it on Yom Tov. Only if it's in a small one where it can't easily get away from you, you can get it with one lunge, then yeah. The bees, not necessarily, would you be able to reach in and just scoop one up without it trying to get away? No, I understand, but the point is that if you end up trapping the bees inside the hive, then you've done a malacha of Seder, at least on the face of it. Again, we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes. We'll get to shortly, is there an issue of Seder with bees? But first, the Gemara says, B'mayo kimta, could have yehoda de islay mukta. So what does it mean? So far, then, it comes out, we've had to explain the b'raisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because if we were to say, we ended up having to say that the only reason you're allowed to cover the beehive is because of the Shnei Chalas. We did not say, look, there's no issue of Mukta. We did not say there's no issue of Mukta. Reb Shimon does not hold of Mukta, at least in the general sense. We could have just said the Braisa is according to Reb Shimon. The fact that we didn't implies that we're trying to say that the Braisa has to be according to Reb Yehuda. Well then, aim a safer, but then look at the second part of Avachalei Skavin Lotzu, that when are you allowed to put on the mat as long as you don't mean to trap the bees?
Meaning
in other words that it's a matter of Dovashen and Miskaven. There's a number of major machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Hilchos Shabbos. One of them is Mukta, which we've been talking about throughout the Masechta. The other one, which we had a lot in Shabbos, is the question of Dovashen and Miskaven. We had it briefly in this Masechta about that you're doing something which not necessarily is going to cause a malacha, but it might. Rabbi Yehuda still says it's also to do, and Rabbi Shimon says it's allowed. If we're saying over here, as long as you don't mean to trap them, that would have to be according to Reb Shimon. I saw on the Reb Shimon, Dovah Dovah Shem is Kavan Mutter. He says, even if you do end up trapping them, as long as you didn't mean to, then it's Mutter. So we have a contradiction. How the first part of the first we're trying to say the Brai says according to Reb Yehuda, who holds the Mukta, but then we have to say that last part seems to be according to Reb Shimon. My answer is that, so it is for Reb Shimon. How could you even think that the Brai says according to Reb Shimon? Both Abaya and Rava say, murder Reb Shimon, Psikresha Valayomos. That even Reb Shimon agrees, like Psikresha, it's inevitably going to happen. There's no question, if you put a mat on there in a way which traps the bees inside, where they can't get out, where you've completely covered up the hive, it's definitely Psikresha. No, but that's the thing. In other words, the hive usually has an opening on top or on the side or whatever, wherever it is. You covered it with a mat. Now the bees are not able to fly out. You've done Seder. Before they were able to fly out, to fly in and out freely, now they can't. What do you mean, Bishvat Shalei, Skavin Lotzud?
If you're covered so much, then they can't
breathe out. No, because we're talking about a mat. The mat is unbreathable. But the holes in it are too small for the bees to be able to get through. Think of the equivalent, if you were to take a screen and put it, a window screen or something and put it over there. Same idea, they can breathe through it, but they can't get in and out.
So it's not the case between Abaya and Rava?
No, Abaya and Rava both say that Reb Shimon holds that Psik Reish of Olayomos is definitely Osir. When does Reb Shimon say that you're allowed? Is when it's Dovah Shein Miskaven, it may or may not happen. But where it definitely happens, as in the case, for example, of dragging a heavy bench where inevitably it's going to dig up dirt, even Reb Shimon holds it's Osir. So what do you mean? If the Braisa is saying, as long as you don't mean to trap them, even Reb Shimon doesn't hold it's a thing. What do you mean, I don't mean to trap them? But you did trap them, and it's inevitable you're going to trap them by putting a mat over it.
On the whole bee.
Yeah, over the whole thing, yeah. So the Gemara says, "Well, Olam Kula Rabbi Yehuda." We could say that the whole Braisa is indeed according to Rabbi Yehuda. But Hach Mayaskin and the Isbe Kavi. The Braisa is talking about over here a case where the beehive, besides having an opening at the top, it also has windows, it also has holes along the sides. So even if you cover the top with a mat, yeah, the bees can still get in and out. So when we say here, actually scavenge lots, it doesn't really mean what you have in mind. It's how you cover it. If you cover it in such a way that there's still an opening, then you're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you cover these sides, then it's a problem.
Then it'll be a problem, right? The white tame a little Yehuda will actually scavenge lots. So you can't. So don't say that Yehuda is saying as long as you don't mean to trap them. that it's not really meaning or not. Elaimu vachli yaseh mitzuda, as long as they don't make a trap out of it by covering it completely. Well, in that case, then if that's all the Braita is saying, then that's obvious. The answer is Maudetema, you might say, but Minoy Nitzoid Osir, when is it Osir, the Isser of Seder, this comes now to your point, only things that it's normal to trap. Animals, for example, birds. But things that are not normally trapped, maybe you would think you'd be mutter. So even if you do cover up the beehive completely, maybe we would say that bees are not normally the kind of creature that you trap. Kamashmalon, that would be the chiddush. Now, what does it mean? What does it mean, the chiddush, actually? Does it mean that seder applies even to creatures that you don't normally trap? Or does it mean bees are in the category of creatures that are normally trapped? So that actually Achronim discussed. The Beis Yosef talks about the idea that bees are actually what it is one of the Rishonim at Sefer HaTruma talks about the idea that even creatures that are not normally trapped, like flies, you're not allowed to trap on Shabbos, and therefore talks about that this is brought in Shulchan Aruch that if you have a box that has flies in it, you have to be careful closing it that you don't trap the flies inside. In Shulchan Aruch brings this based on Sefer HaTruma. And Marsha asks on that based on our Gemara. But the Mephoshim explain, that's the thing. Marsha is understanding our Gemara to say that only creatures that normally are trapped, that you're not allowed to trap, and bees would be in that category, but therefore flies, for example, would not. That's why he asks on the Beis Yosef, whereas the Sefer HaTruma and the Beis Yosef, and then therefore the Shulchan Aruch, all say that no, the Din of Seder even applies to creatures that are not normally trapped, like flies. The sukkah is big enough. No, because we talked about earlier in the Masechta that if you have a large area where the creature can still easily get away, that's not really an issue with Seder. Oh, right, yeah, so on Shabbos and Yom Tov, yeah, that would be a problem.
Why?
Right, because that's Seder, so, yeah.
When you let it go afterwards?
No, but even if you catch it, if you catch a fly or whatever under a cup, or a bee or whatever under a yellow jacket, under a cup, and then you release it, still you've done Seder. The fact that you release it doesn't help anything. You still did a malacha. Yeah.
But the big traps that have...
That's different. You're not doing anything. You put them up before Shabbos, and that's.
So the machlokes is to determine whether it applies specifically to bees, or to anything else.
No, the machlokes is, are bees considered a creature that normally are trapped or not? If they are, then maybe they are, maybe they're not. Maybe people, maybe bees are not the kind of creature that you normally go and then trap. You go and trap animals, birds, or whatever. Tosfos talks about the idea, by the way, that even according to Reb Shimon, you might say that actually there don't necessarily have to be windows, like large openings all around the sides of the beehive, but at least in order for it not to be psychrasia, you have to have some little hole over there that the bees would be able to find and get out if they were really desperate, basically.
In what?
In the beehive.
In the beehive.
Yeah.
Well, in reality,
you're saying, right. But on the other hand, it would still be psychrasia unless there's that little hole, yeah. Going back to, we said, in the course of the discussion, we were discussing the question, well, why according to Rabbi Yitzchok, would you be allowed to cover this beehive if all that's in there, b'moisa gshamim, is the two loaves, is the two honeycombs, and the two honeycombs are usually reserved for the bees? And therefore, we had to start saying that you had them in mind beforehand. Rav Ashi, going back to that, Rav Ashi says a very simple answer. Mikotoni b'moisa chamim, b'moisa gshamim. The Braisa didn't say in the sunny days and in the rainy days, meaning during the summer and during the winter, respectively. It said b'chamim b'nechamim b'gshamim b'nechamim katoni. It said when it's sunny, you might want to protect them from the sun. When it's rainy, you might want to protect them from the rain. For example, so it doesn't have to be talking about winter and summer as the season. It just means b'yom nissen or b'yom tishrei. It's talking about, for example, during nissen, during Pesach, or during tishrei, during Sukkot, d'ikacham. Then you have, it can be sunny some days, it can be rainy other days, and there is still honey in the hive. But then you don't have to be doichik and then say that we're only talking about the specific two loaves. It could be talking about the honey, the hive is full of honey, and that's why Rabbi Yitzchok would say, therefore you're allowed to cover it.
Two loaves would be when exactly?
The two loaves would be only during the winter. Yeah. But that's what Rav Ashi is saying. The Braita didn't say anything about the winter necessarily. The Braita said, during the sunny season and during the sunny days and during the rainy days. So there can be individual sunny and rainy days, and this in a Tishrei time, and you still need to cover it for a day or whatever while it's very hot or while it's very cold. And during that time of year, there is honey in the hive. Because
during the sunny days, they make honey.
No, because during the spring, they start collecting honey, and it's still there in the fall. Then the Mishnah said, "V'noisin kli tachas adelef for Shabbos, that you can put a bucket under a drip in the house on Shabbos." Tana, we learn in a braisa, if the keli gets full, if the bucket gets full, shofech v'shoyne, you can spill it out and put it back to where it was. Ve'ena nimna, and you don't have to hold yourself back from it. You can do it all day if necessary. And again, now we did say before that we were talking about bedelef haroy, about where the rain that's leaking in is suitable. You can use the water for something. It's not completely filthy. The question is, was that only according to Rabbi Yitzchak, or is that according to the Maskana, according to everybody? That's part of the discussion that comes into the question of whether you're allowed to put a bucket under a leak on Shabbos. Gemara tells a case. Berechaya da Abaya Toluf, the place where Abaya had his millstones, there was a leak there. Now the millstones themselves were stones. The rain wasn't going to damage them. The problem is that the millstones had cement on the sides of them, on the bottom of them, or whatever, to hold them in place. The rain will dissolve the cement. So also came to Rabba. So he came to Rabba to ask him what to do. So Rabba tells him, "Zil aile lepuyach lahasam, go take your bed into there. Delahevik graf shori, then the water that's there will be considered like a graf shori. It'll be considered like a chamber pot, which is a disgusting thing to have around. You can't stand having it around your bed. Vaske, and then you'll be allowed to take it out. The bucket.
It must be covered in.
Take it underneath the bed.
No, not the bucket. Sorry, you'll be able to take out. Let me rephrase that. Once you take your bed in there, the millstones will be considered a graf shori. Nobody wants to have millstones near their bed. So then it'll... So then you'll be able to carry them outside. Millstones themselves otherwise would be mukta. But if you're making them into a graf shori, then you're allowed. It's something repulsive. Graf shori literally means a chamber pot. What it means, in halacha, it's the concept that if you have something that's disgusting to have around, like it also applies to garbage on the table, etc., then you're allowed to remove it.
And he says that
you
can move the water. Yeah, so you are minor
Leila.
Well, look. I can see.
Well, look, it says, look,
right?
I don't know what Steinsalt says, but Rashi seems to be saying we're talking about the Rechaim. She yuma usim ha Rechaim shalocha liyas the same itasko. It'll be disgusting to have the Rechaim in front of your bed.
Rechaim
is there.
Millstones.
Now, apparently they weren't that big, no.
From the millstones, what, you have a lot of...
No, it's just normally you can't remove them on Shabbos because they're mukta. But in this case, if it's a graf shari, you're allowed to. Yosef Abaye v'kakashale, but Abaye wasn't satisfied with that answer. He started sitting and thinking. After all, are you allowed to l'chatchila put yourself in a situation where you have a graf shari? What is Rabbi telling me to move my bed in there, so now it becomes a graf shori'i? You're allowed to, if you have a graf shori'i, then you're allowed to move it. But you're not allowed to put yourself in a situation where you'll have one. We had this back in the second paragraph. We had one of the reasons we said why you can't invite a goy for a meal on Yom Tov is because you're going to end up with a graf shori'i. You're going to end up with a cup that contains his leavings of wine, which is going to be yayin nesach. It's also bana, and that would be a graf shori'i.
Your
graf shori is a chamber pot, but it means anything disgusting. Steinsalt says. I don't know where he got that from. Meanwhile, Adahochi, as he was thinking about it, Nofel Berechaya Dabaya, this room where the millstones were in, collapsed, caved in. Omar, so Abaya said to himself, "Tasty to Avri Ademar. I deserve that for having violated what Rabba said. Rabba said I should do this. I shouldn't have been second guessing him." No, he didn't. That's the thing. He didn't bring in his bed because he was wondering, "How could you? How is Rabba telling me I'm allowed to do that? That would be making a graf shori il chatchila." So he didn't end up doing it. And meanwhile, the thing caved in. Yeah. Right. Which Tosfos points out. I mean, so Tosfos points out, the Taka, doesn't Abaya have a point? You're not allowed to make a graf shori il chatchila. So Tosfos has two possibilities. Either that Rava held here it's allowed, because otherwise the millstones are going to get ruined. No, it just means the millstones are going to be ruined. It means after Shabbos or after Yom Tov, you have to buy a new pair of millstones, but it costs money. Or Tosfos says the difference is here, effectively, you already have the graf shorei. You already have the rain is leaking in. You already have it. It's a disgusting situation. So all you're doing is moving in your bed in order that it's more disgusting to you, basically. So you have more of an excuse to do something about it.
That's not funny.
And not necessarily was this on Yom Tov either. It could have been on Shabbos. Okay, that's small ones in those days also that they do by hand.
We saw the huge
one. Yeah. Of a shmur, graf shorei v'ovet, a chamber pot or urine pot. A graf and ovet, Rashi says, are basically the same thing, but one's used for tzaya and the other one's used for urine. Mutaloi tzim la'ashpa, you're allowed to take them out to the trash. And when you bring it back, you should put in some water and then bring it back. Why? Because the kalim themselves, this chamber pot, is muktzah machmas miyus. It's a disgusting thing. You would never use it for any other purpose. So intrinsically, it should be muktzah. If you're putting water in it, then if you're putting water in it, at least the water, in principle, you know, an animal could drink the water or whatever. So therefore, it sort of minimizes the muktzah issue. No, that's not the reason. So, sovereign, you know, graf shorei agav mona ein b'fnas meloi. So they thought, based on that means you're allowed to take, based on what Shmuel's saying, it sounds like you're allowed to take out the re'i, you're allowed to take out the excrement only when it's in the keli, where maybe the keli itself is not 100% mukta, but maybe you wouldn't be allowed to actually pick up the tzoya itself and throw it out. B'fnas meloi, but toshma, but we can bring a proof that not. Dahu achbarta di shtakach be'isparmaki di Ravashi. It once happened that they found a mouse among the spice wax of Ravashi. Amalahu Ravashi, and Ravashi told them, nakta b'tzutzisa, pick it up by the tail, ba'apkua, and take it out. So we see that even the graf shorei, even the re'i itself, even the disgusting object itself, in this case the mouse, you're allowed to pick it up directly. You don't say you have to pick it up by use of something else. That's what we're saying. Because it's a graf shorei, because it's a disgusting thing to have around, therefore you're allowed to. Lav Dafka was still alive. It could have been dead, you know. What? It's not considered what? Tzar Baal Chaim?
No, Tzar Baal Chaim, the hunting.
Oh, no, because that's why I'm saying it may be that it was already dead, so therefore there's no issue with Seda. Or it could be that it was in a confined area already. You know, it's already cornered there, basically.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you put your hand. Yeah, it could be.
You couldn't pick it up by
yourself.
Okay. I'm very unlucky.
Okay.
We'll just run this pretty quick.
Mishnah says, Kol shechayav in olav mishum shvut, anything which you chayav on it midrabanan, that is, that you're not allowed to do it mitzad shvut, mitzad it's an isur drabanan, or mishum rishus, or things which it's a rishus to do, or mishum mitzvah, or things that are an actual mitzvah. The difference between rishus and mitzvah is basically, rishus and mitzvah are both things that we think of as mitzvahs, but rishus are kind of like optional mitzvahs. You could do them now, or you could do them later. As opposed to mitzvah means something which is an actual complete mitzvah, that it has to be done. Or actually, I shouldn't say now or later. Rishus is rather you may do it, you don't have to do it though. It's an optional mitzvah. As well, we'll talk about some examples. Chayav and olav. No, chayav means you chayav a punishment for doing them on Yom Tov. So any of these things that you chayav on them for Shabbos, also chayav and olav Yom Tov. You also chayav for them on Yom Tov. The Eilahen Mishum Shavuos, the following are also Mishum Shavuos, where all of these things really are Shavuos that the Mishnah is going to list, but this first group are things where there's no mitzvah involved. They're completely optional activities. Lo Olin Be'ilin, you're not allowed to climb up on a tree because you may break off a branch. V'lo Yroichin Agav Behema, you can't ride on an animal. Actually, we'll go through the Gemara, we'll explain each one of them. Why not? You can't ride on an animal. V'lo Shotin Apnamayim, you can't swim in the water. V'lo Metapchin, you can't clap your hands. And you can't slap your hands on your thighs like that. And not dance. So we talked about the other day. We talked about the other day in the Gemara that even in those times, there were people who were making on it, and we said, what do we do about it? And we said, Hanach Lam Yisrael, you know, better, more to your Shogun value Mazidin. They're not going to listen to you anyway, and it's and it's only an Issa Derabana. Having said, relax. So, one second. Right, so the Gemara is going to say over here, which it said over there, which we said over there, the reason for those Xeris is because you may fix musical instruments. Tosfos there pointed out that nowadays most people don't know how to fix musical instruments, so it's less of an issue. There is more of a heter. And indeed, the Minchas Alazar has a long shuva where he discusses all the pros and cons of it, because of course by his time, we, you know, 70, 80 years ago, it was very common among Chassidim particularly that you dance and sing and clap and whatever on Shabbos. So he So he wrote a whole shuva defending it, partly based on this issue of that there's not such an issue of the sack and clay shear. And the Rebbe talked about it a few times. I mentioned the other day that everyone said that now, as we come closer to Yemos HaMashiach, then we start seeing this kind of detail in halacha becomes revealed, that we're allowed to show this kind of simcha openly.
Well, I'm wondering if somewhat similar to that, with the rise of so much a cappella music that we can listen to on the Omer, because we don't listen
right.
to
the
music.
Yeah, okay. No, but he's talking about the fact that you have more and more of it available.
Yeah, they're able to, like some groups like Mac, they're able to create, like, some of the beats and all that with their...
Anyway, let's continue. The Elohein Mishum Rishus, the following things are also midrabanan as Rishus, meaning again, they're optional, they're mitzvahs, but they're optional type of mitzvahs. Loid Donin, you're not allowed to judge Dinin Mominus or Dinin Nefashis on Shabbos. Veloy Makadshin, you're not allowed to do Kiddushin. Veloy Chotzin, you're not allowed to do Chalitza. Veloy Miyabin, you're not allowed to do Yibum. The Elohein Mishum Mitzvah, then the following ones are also as an actual complete mitzvah, where it's an actual, you have a chiyuv to do it, but nevertheless, you can't on Shabbos. Loy Makdishin, you can't donate something to Hektish. V'loy Ma'arichin, you can't donate an Erech to Hektish, where you say, we'll have a next week's parasha, you know, Erki Yolai, Erech Pliny Yolai, that you have to pay X amount of money to the Beis Mikdash. V'loy Ma'achrimin, you can't declare something Cherem, which there's two types of Cherem. They're called Cherme Gavoya and Cherme Koyanim. The kind of Cherem we're talking about over here, Rashi says, is a Berek Abayis, Cherme Gavoya. When you declare this object, this Cherem, it now belongs to Berek Abayis. It's now donated to Hektish. Ma'arichin means you declare, for example, you say, as it says in the Torah, that I promise to pay my erech to the Beis Mikdash. So you look up the table in the Torah in the last parak of Bukha Kosei, and you see your age, your gender, and then you know how much you have to pay. Yeah, but it's not really how much you're worth. It's so to speak, how much your neshama is worth, because your actual worth is called damim. That's a whole different issue. We'll learn that in Rosh Hashanah in next week, Be'ez Hashem. We'll get into that.
And we're
going to
have another
participant
joining us.
Oh, good, okay. All right. The Ein Magbi and Truma Meiser, the Loi Magbi and Truma Meiser, and you don't have to take off Truma and Meiser. Kol Eilu B'Yomtev Amru, all of these things apply on Yomtev. Kavachayma B'Shabbos. How much more so they all apply on Shabbos? That's kind of interesting. The Tosfos Yomtev asks, I mean, the Mishnah seems to sort of be backwards. First it started saying that these things are definitely also on Shabbos, and you should know they're also on Yomtev. Then it says, now it's saying the other way around, all these things are also on Yom Tov, how much more so on Shabbos? So what is it? Which one was it first said in reference to? So Tosfos Yom Tov wants to say that the Mishnah, in this second statement, the Mishnah is hinting at other things that are not mentioned in the Mishnah, which are also on Yom Tov, and you should know that they're also on Shabbos, even though they're not explicitly listed over here. He just said, no, things that are not explicitly listed in the Mishnah, but we know that are also on Yom Tov and on Shabbos as well. The Dura sort of showing him a sefer on Jewish history. He has a whole long discussion about it. He has a whole theory that there used to be something called Mishnah Rishonah, like a very early version of the Mishnah, which later on the Tanoim added to it and discussed it and whatever, and eventually it became the basis of the Mishnayos as we have that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote. Anyway, he wants to say that this Mishnah originally was part of Masechet Shabbos in this early version of Mishnayos, so therefore it mentioned these things are also on Shabbos, and you should know they're also on Yom Tov. Later on, when Rebbe put this Mishnah into Masechet Beisa, then he had to point out, you know what, now that it's in Masechet Beisa, all of these things we're talking about Yom Tov, but you should know really they all apply to Shabbos also. Anyway, the Mishnah finishes off. Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos, ela Oichel Nefesh v'Lavav. There's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos as far as what's Aser, except for Oichel Nefesh, except for food-related malachas. I saw, by the way, I think we'll leave the Gemara for tomorrow at this point, but I saw, it's 9:30 already, but there's a cute verse that I saw from Rav Zusha on this last thing, Ein Ben Yom Tov L'Shabbos, Ala Oichal Nefesh Bilvad, he says, based on a Zohar, he says, there's an idea that when it comes to eating on Yom Tov, when it comes to having your Sudas Yom Tov, it's important to have guests. The Rambam actually talks about the idea. If a person has a Yom Tov meal and doesn't invite guests, then it's a Perish Chageichem. Like the Eibush says, you know, I'll take the dirt from your Yom Tov and throw it in your face. On the other hand, the Zohar says that does not apply to Shabbos. Perish Shabbachem like Amar. So therefore, what Abzusha says on this, the Mishnah is also coming to hint to us, Ein Ben Yom Tov L'Shabbos Ala Oichal Nefesh Bilvad. Namely, on Yom Tov, don't have your Oichal Nefesh Bilvad. You have to have it with guests. But on Shabbos, even if you were to have Oichal Nefesh Bilvad, you eat a meal all by yourself and don't invite any guests, there's still a difference. On Shabbos, it's not, that's the difference. But on Shabbos, Oinig Shabbos is an important thing in itself, and therefore, even if you don't have guests, you haven't done such a bad thing. As opposed to on Yom Tov, to not have guests, to not invite guests, like the Rambam says, you know, you lock your house and you're not allowing anybody in, would be a serious thing.